call this workshop of Port Townsend of April 9th to order.
Alan Dashen's associates, it's the same Dashen associate, technical name, of the company, they've been our financial advisors for quite a number of years, and they also advise by a number of other port districts, as well as other local governments, cities, PUDs, that sort of thing. And we had a meeting, Pete, you were there a couple of weeks ago, Alan was there along with Scott, and Alan's out in Portland, they're issuing a bond today to a PUD down there. So Scott's here to give us a briefing. And I think with our next topic after this on the facility visits that we need to get going on, you know, and kind of paint a picture of what our capital projects and major maintenance issues are in the coming years is one thing, but you really need to have the picture of our financial profile for the coming years too, so you can start. And obviously, there's never going to be enough money, so that's where the commission, the hard work comes, and prioritization, and, you know, getting the right projects done, biggest bang for the buck kind of a thing. So you've got a copy of the briefing in front of you, and I'll just turn it over to Scott, and he'll take us through, and I imagine you're open for questions as you go through the briefing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we get Scott Bauer with A. Dashen and Associates Financial Advisor. Yes, please interrupt and ask questions. As I move along in the presentation. So how the presentation will go is I'll talk about the bond market in general, your outstanding bonds, which you have out there. Bonds can be refinanced as they get towards their call date, which I'll explain and show some of those. And then I think maybe the second half of the topic is we were asked to look at a borrowing of about $4 million and just to see how does that get layered into your existing debt. So I'll show that to you. So if we move to page one, this is the bond market update. So we hit historical interest rate lows back in December of 2012. And from there, interest rates have started to creep up as it sounds like the economy is getting better and as the Federal Reserve is pulling back their quantitative easing. I think there was a Fed meeting in about the May time frame of last year, and rates really shot up again for the bond market. It was about a 1% increase, which was quite a lot. But from an August high, actually, rates have come down a bit. So again, we get it's back and forth on indications of the economy. Is it really improving, or will the Fed keep up with their quantitative easing? So the graphs at the bottom, same data, just different time frame. The graph on the left goes back to 1990. Graph on the right zooms into the most current or past 3 years. And again, you can see hit the low there in December, a peak in August of last year, and interest rates have somewhat trailed off now. Expectation continues to be that rates will go up, but you could probably go back many years and people keep saying rates are going to go up and rates seem to keep going down. But I suppose the safe bet is to say rates are going up.
So this is the rate of a bond buyer rate. That's not really the same thing as the rate that's charged to banks and so on. This is a rate that bonds go by or something?
Yeah, so this looks at the 20th year maturity of a basket of index of 20 well-rated bonds. Mm-hmm. So it would be a tax-exempt rate, so generally, again, what you know, the court might issue, but again, of a double A type general obligation bond. So it's really more to give you a sense of how the market has fluctuated over the past two decades. Any other questions on the bond market? So we'll, on page two, we show the port's outstanding LTGO bonds. And from top to bottom on the list above, you know, is in order of bonds that you've issued that are still outstanding. We show the next column over how much you have outstanding. After that is the callable par. So when bonds are issued, they typically have a 10-year call protection. So we can't refinance those bonds until we hit that 10-year point. And so the callable amount is that amount after the 10-year call, or after
And I might add, last week while you were gone, Amy, Morgan Stanley called on our next callable. Probably to see if we want to do something.
Right. Yeah, we'll show you some of the refinancings here coming up. So these, and I just looked up, you know, for instance, what these bonds finance. Your 2005 bonds were your Port Hudson Marina. You had a refunding of in the 2006 bonds, and then the 2010 bonds, your most recent LTGO issuance was your Boat Haven Marina Docks and I think your replacement of your travel lift.
Okay, now I'm trying to have a hard time figuring out. You just related those bonds, but how do I tell which ones are which on these graphs and stuff?
Okay, so again, going out to the far left of the table at the top.
Yep.
The LTGO bonds 2005. Mm-hmm. Those are the Port Hudson Arena.
Point Hudson.
Yeah.
The 2006 bonds were a refunding of prior bonds. I don't have what the purpose of those were. But they refinanced earlier bonds.
Was that for the
96 heavy haulout, I believe. Right?
I think it was
Yeah. What about the renovation you did down there at Point Hudson offices? What
that was all rolled,
it was all rolled into the one along with the new lip pier down there and all the new floats.
So yeah, that was rolled into the 2005?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
And the two the two 2010 issuances really should be looked at as a combined issuance, but those were for Boat Haven Marina Docks and for the replacement of the travel lift.
AB Dock and the 70-ton mm-hmm. travel lift here.
And then similarly, the graph below that shows the outstanding bonds, you know, the final maturity, and showing how much debt service is paid each year. Now these have an interesting twist from the standpoint that the 2010Bs were what were called Build America bonds. And those were authorized in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, also known as the stimulus package. And what those allowed issuers to do for 2 years, 2009 and 2010, were to issue taxable bonds that would receive a 35% subsidy from the government. And so when these bond issues were run, we compared tax-exempt interest rates with the taxable interest rates with the subsidy, and whichever one was lower is how we issued the bonds. So at the time of the market, the short maturities were tax-exempt, and the longer maturities were these Build America bonds. So that's, again, these are shown net of the federal subsidy.
So, Scott, just again on the graph.
Yep.
This is our annual debt service, is that what you're showing me?
That's correct.
Okay. So our annual debt service is somewhere between $9 and $1 million up through 2025. Is that correct?
That's right. So, $900,000 approximately in 2014. And you see it escalates, and yeah, it's structured to escalate along with escalation of the tax levy.
Right.
Where then it levels off and then drops off, as you say, after 2025.
And then the 2006 bond, so that is that the one that you got called with Morgan Stanley last week?
I would have to believe they probably called about the 2005
bond. Yeah, the one that the call date is July of next year.
Okay.
And there's also a revenue bond we'll talk about that's callable this year, but I would imagine they probably called you about this larger.
But I guess my question is on the 2006.
Yes.
So that one matures in 2017, and we can't refinance that. Is that right? Or
you can refinance it. You would pay the bank a penalty.
Okay.
So I don't.
Oh yeah, with penalty. I see that.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different. Some banks, depending on, you know, at the time of the issuance, may charge you a penalty. You know, in this case, that's what happens here if you were to refinance.
So the advice on that one would be just to pay it out. I mean, let it pay out.
Right. So right now we're just letting that roll out.
Understand. Okay.
Now remember, all your GO bonds are underwritten by the property tax.
Right.
And
right,
we're collecting roughly 900,000 property tax. So. Mm-hmm.
When you say LTGO bonds, you're not LTGO, that's just an abbreviation, okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
Sure that we're not. And when you're talking about debt service on here, I assume that this graph is debt service on it, but I assume that it's not just interest. That debt service means the entire amount we pay, including principal, so it's not just the interest on it. And then we have another payment someplace else, is the whole thing.
Yeah, so this is the principal and interest annually.
Got it.
For all these issues, that's the graph. Absolutely right. Any further questions on the LTGO page?
I have one question.
Sure.
So on the Port Hudson bond, 205, one in blue.
Yes.
Are we paying principal on that right now as well? Or is that, I know it's being rolled over to a...
Principal and interest.
So I'd have to look, but apparently there's
there principal is paying principal on that.
Yeah, principal and interest on that.
If I may add, some of those principal payments are relatively low until they ramp up.
Well, I think that's exactly what's showing.
Okay.
Page 3 is the outstanding revenue bonds. So these are secured by the net revenues of the port, as opposed to, again, the GO bonds, which are by the tax levy. So the first one listed revenue refunding bonds, 2005. So those were what we call an advance refunding of your 1996 bonds. And again, I don't have with me the purpose of what those bonds were, but that's what the 2005s did.
Yeah, they started the heavy haul out and the expansion of the shipyard in 96. So
you see the final maturity there coming up in 2016, and they will be callable this year. So there is probably a refinancing opportunity with those. Again, come the November 1st, 2014. But there'll only be two maturities left, totaling $890,000. The second one listed then is a junior lien revenue bond. And that was issued last year through Cashmere Valley Bank to pay for your administration building, or pay partly for your administration building. And that was structured to wrap around your existing revenue bonds here. So that's why you see some interest only for 3 years, and then the principal gets paid out 17 and 18. And those bonds are, I guess, as opposed to the earlier bank loan that we talked about on the GO side, these are callable anytime if for some reason you need to refinance, restructure.
There's no penalty.
You said I see interest only. How do I see that?
The
little
see the little red at the top of the blue bars.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's interest only, but that's how it's depicted here. Is that there's a little bit of interest being paid, and then principal gets paid in 17 and 18.
So red is principal, because that's not the way that this.
No, went. No. This is the debt service on the junior lien bonds, and
right.
I do not break down the bar by principal and interest, but I'm just saying that it is interest only.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out how you said I would see that this is interest only. So how would I see that on this sheet?
You would not see that on the sheet.
Okay.
You know it because he told us.
Oh. And because there's just such a tiny bit of red on top of the blue. that's just a little, like, under $9,000 of interest.
These, you know which ones she's talking to? These right here, where I got it circled.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm trying to figure out, he said I would see, and I figured I was missing something, that this is interest and this is principal, but I'm not missing something.
Little red is interest only, but then
the little red says here, it's a junior lien revenue bond as opposed to interest only, and the blue is the revenue bonds from 2005, so I'm not saying that that means interest only, I'm saying that's one bond versus another bond.
Blue is your 2005 bonds,
right.
Red is your 2013 bonds.
Right.
And this is showing total debt service being paid each
right
year.
So in 2014, we're paying a whole lot on the 2005 and just a little bit on the 2013. Mm-hmm. And what we're paying of that is interest.
Right. Now, I wouldn't know how much that's interest. I know we're paying a lot on it, but I mean, how do we know how much is interest, how much is principal? In other words, I'm trying to figure out if I'm missing somewhere where I can determine which, if principal is being reduced substantially or if it's all just going to interest, and I can't see that I can tell that from this.
On this, there's no breakdown between principal and interest on the graph.
Yeah, we can get to that number if you want.
So is that 2005 also for the Point Hudson and then the renovation of the...
No, I believe that was the Sperry Buildings. We had to refinance the Sperry Buildings, and I think that's what that is. So we bought all those buildings from Bill Sperry for $1 million. I'll check on that, Brad, but I'm pretty sure, if I remember right, back in 2005 we did that.
Okay.
Oh, so what was heavy haul out?
Heavy haul out was back on...
I think the revenue side is the heavy haul out.
Is it?
The revenue side is the heavy haul out, but I will double check.
The heavy haul out was 96, so...
These are revenue refunding bonds, though.
Okay.
In the 05.
So the 05 was for the heavy haul out, then?
I believe so, yes, but I will confirm that.
And then just to clarify, Scott, the 2013 revenue bond, you have 14, 15, and 16, 2014 and 15 and 16 are interest only on that. And then we pay those off in 2017 and 2018.
That's correct.
That's kind of like two massive principal payments spread over 2 years, with some interest probably mixed in there.
That's correct.
I understand that. Okay.
Yep.
And then what you're showing is on 2005, on that bond, the blue... We finished with that in 2016?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, got it. Paying a lot of principal and interest in each of those 3 years, 14, 15, 16. Got it, okay. I'm clear.
Any further questions on page 3? So page 4 then and 5 get into just a snapshot look at refinancing two of the bonds, the ones that are more recently coming upon their call date. So the first one we look at here on page 4 is a possible refinancing of your 2005 revenue bonds, which are callable November 1st of this year. So again, you have about $1.3 million total outstanding, of which $890,000 of that is callable. So again, that's the principal that matures in 2015 and 2016. Interest rates on that are 5%. We've already seen the final maturity and the call date there. So down below, what we do is take a look at refinancing the debt given current interest rates and what the difference is. So basically, you see below $890,000 are the existing bonds at 5%. Replace those with $870,000 at about 1.75%. Provides total savings over the period of time of almost $40,000, which equates to about $18,000 per year. If they were refunded this year, there'd be a little bit of savings this year, and then about $18,000 in 15 and 16.
And how
will it be paid off in 16?
It would be paid off in 16.
And how are you able to reduce the interest rate by that amount?
Well, now we're talking, well, so when the bonds were first issued, let's say they were issued as bonds, and these were the 19th and 20th year maturity. So at that time, the interest rates would have been higher.
Right, want to make more money on it.
For holding that, bond out that long. Now we're here to just looking at a two-year financing. So we're at a real short part of it.
Why would you not want to refinance?
I know.
That's kind of a question.
Well, why wouldn't you want to refinance the whole 890 instead of 870? Is that difference in $20,000 going to be paid off between now and when it's called? Is that correct?
So this gets a little bit into when bonds are issued, there can be some premium that is generated in which the bond holder not only would send you $870,000 to pay off your $890,000, but they would provide a premium to the port, which allows us to issue fewer bonds to refund your existing bonds. So I guess in summary, the whole $890,000 gets refunded
Oh, we're gonna have to pay $170 because we get a premium for being such good guys?
But yeah, so the bond market, what a premium is that there's a market interest rate, and then bondholders sometimes, I mean, similar to you know, paying points on a house mortgage, but in this case, the lenders are actually buying up the interest rate. So to do that, since it's going over the market interest rate, they pay you up front for that privilege. And it's just, it's the current environment we're in which bondholders want a little bit higher coupon, which is the interest rate that they get paid semi-annually. It gives them a little protection against rising interest rates, which they figure are coming.
Can you talk about the last three bullet points on that page?
Yeah, so gross savings just looks at the debt service that you're currently paying versus the debt service that would be on the new bonds and takes the difference. So that's the $39,248.
Versus the NPV?
Yeah, so then the NPV gets into...
What's NPV?
Oh, sorry. So it's the net present value.
The what?
Net present value. So what that is it takes a look at those cash flow savings and brings them back to today's dollar. So it essentially says if you could capture those savings that are going to occur over the next 3 years and actually put them in your pocket, it's approximately $38,000. And the reason we put a number like that down is if I had those same savings, but let's say I stuck them out 20 years and you weren't going to get the savings for 20 years, if I present value those back, then this number would go much lower. So it just allows you to do a comparison between two possible financings and get the value of them. Really, for the port, what you would see as a savings is the gross savings number.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the real difference in debt service that you.
So again, right? How is this even a decision? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. I mean, what negatives would there be associated with making, you know, with going for the refinance?
Yeah, I mean, given the estimated interest rates, I would think it is something that you'd want to do. And that's, I mean, in the last part, I guess we recommend proceeding with it. The decision point might be if you were issuing other bonds this year for new money, which, you know, I guess we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes.
You
might wrap those into that refinancing. If you're not, then you might do it as a standalone. But there's, I guess, really no reason to not do it. I think it's basically good financial housekeeping to do it.
Is there a fee for doing that?
There is.
What's that?
It, generally, we assume about a 1.5% fee for everybody's involvement, banks, lawyers. But I don't have the exact amounts.
Is that 1.5% of the 890?
Correct.
So, I mean, so is that fee included in these costs?
Yeah, so what you see, the savings there is shown net of assumed issuance costs. So yes, it's included.
So there's no other costs that all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute.
No.
Okay.
No, so I assumed a certain level of issuance cost, and then that savings amount is shown net of that cost.
That fee is about like $14,000.
I'm sorry.
That fee would be like $14,000, I think, something like that. Okay.
So, page 4 wasn't complicated enough. Page 5 actually, unfortunately, gets a little more complicated. Because this becomes a question on do you do it now or do you do it later? And I'll get to it in a second. So, this is looking at 2005 bonds. Again, almost $4.5 million outstanding. Interest rates range from the 4 to 4.2. The key here is that these bonds are not callable until next year, so July 1st, 2015. So that means if somehow you put much of money in the bank, you put it into escrow, it would sit there until July 1st of 2015, at which point bondholders would be paid off. But you can't pay them off early. But the decision point is you could potentially issue refunding bonds now known interest rates and put that into the bank again for a year and pay off those bondholders versus waiting a year at unknown interest rates, but at a potential of higher savings.
David, so let me
see if I can step through this
okay.
a little bit better. So looking at the first column, this looks at if the port were to issue bonds to refund these 2005 bonds and issue them this year. So it'd be a year ahead of their call date. So in that case, you'd be replacing about $4.2 million of existing bonds at 4.1% with about $4.4 million at 2.55%. And that on a gross savings basis is about $305,000. So that assumes current interest rates, and that's the kind of savings you would see. Now,
sorry, can you explain again why?
Sure.
Why it goes from 4.2 to almost 4.5?
Right. So there's in there you would need to be putting enough money into the bank not only to pay off the $4.2 million of principal, but from that escrow account, bondholders would be getting paid their interest payments. So there's interest payments due to the bondholders included in this total amount.
So this, I mean, it's like the interest payment penalty, or I mean, what is that called?
Well, it's just that they're owed those payments. Because
we can't renew until next year.
Right.
So until we renew, we still got to pay them their interest, the bond.
Right.
So in other words, then what you're saying is that 4.235 is the amount for now, but if we just let that go forward, then the amount would have been, had it just gone along with the interest that we would be paying, then that would have been 4.47?
Well, I mean, the 4.47 would include the principal and interest to pay off the bonds, assumed cost of issuance,
mm-hmm.
and net of any premium that you might generate. So mm-hmm. it's, I can provide a breakdown of these numbers that you can see exactly how do I get to these two numbers.
I mean, otherwise it's just, I don't know what I'm looking at here. So if you could do that, that'd be helpful.
Sure.
CJ.
I'll try to explain it from a layman's point of view. Someone has to pay the interest on that amount that is being refinanced.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
We borrowed money. We owe money. We're holding the money to pay off someone in the future. But meanwhile, those bondholders still have to be paid their interest, even though we've already refinanced it somewhere else.
Because you're financing.
Does that make better sense?
Mm-hmm. For the need.
I mean, the good news is we're more than covering that increase
with the savings.
With the savings. I mean, the difference between 4.47 minus 4.23 is, you know, 200 and something, and we're saving 305 right off the bat. So you're covering it right away, and you're marching forward at 2.5% interest rather than 4.1% interest.
The way I think of these bonds, these are actual commodities. You know, we were able to get this money because we were able to sell these bonds on the open market to, you know, Joe and Sam and Mary and everybody else. And they bought them because
right.
they knew they were going to get, you know, make some money on it. And we still got to pay that. So, but you're right, the gross savings cover that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really it's the savings number that we do focus on. I mean, granted, in this case, you're issuing more bonds, but it's at a lower interest rate. But if you then compare debt service side by side and summed up the difference between each, you'd end up at the $305,000 of savings.
So is there any risk factor with doing this? I mean,
well, yes. And so that's what we get into this next call. So the risk factor is, if you issue now, you have known interest rates, and then you would end up with basically known savings this year. But if you wait, you're at the risk of higher interest rates. But then there's a drag on. If you issue money now, you put that money into an escrow. You've issued bonds at 2.55%. That money you put into escrow is earning 0.1%. So there's this negative arbitrage that weighs down on the savings number. if I look at the second column, which takes using the exact same interest rates as what I did in this first column, so again, using the same interest rates, but moving out a year, so I'm now at the call date, your savings improve from a gross savings of $305,000 to $461,000. And that assumes, again, current interest rates.
But who knows?
But who knows?
Interest rates also could go down. They probably won't, but... Yeah.
They could. So that's the risk. That's the risk of executing it now.
Can you give an example? I mean, like, what happens if they go up? 1%, 2%, or whatever. I mean,
that's... So this bottom line here, see, the rate changed to match the advance refunding savings, which means looking at the refund at the call date column, I increased those interest rates by 5.53%. You end up the same savings as the refund on the 7/1/2014. So that's the sensitivity, that's the risk. If interest rates increase more than the 0.53, then your savings are lower than if you did it now. If savings go up less than 0.53, then, well, you're already at, you'd be more than to do it now.
Okay. So what you're saying then is that if we do this based on interest rates now, we'd have the first column. If we do this in a year based on interest rates now, we'd have the second column. But if interest rates go up by 0.53%, then we'd either be the same as what we are now or less if the interest rates go up more.
More than 0.53%. I think that was well put.
Okay.
Very well put.
So at what point do we go backwards? At what point are we actually...
Above 0.53.
So we're actually losing money, and where it's like, oh, gee, I wish we hadn't made...
Well, you wouldn't be losing, you'd still be saving money.
Right.
You'd just be saving less money than if you did it right now and made the $305,000 savings.
But I guess, to your point, once you hit the call date, all things being equal, and I mean, you know, if interest rates were to stay flat, once you hit the call date, if you were to do nothing, your savings potential goes down. So heading into the call date beforehand, again, it's a question of, do you walk it in now or do you wait? But once we hit the call date, then generally it's the decision is just to get it done and refinance the debt if there's savings.
So are we kind of driving this thing? This thing's kind of being driven by the revenue bond, right? The fact that we've got to do something about the revenue bond now.
Or that we can do something about the revenue. We don't have to.
Right.
But we can do something. Yeah.
Correct. Right. So there's...
So just to, let me clarify my question. I mean, if we said, no, we don't want to do anything, we want to roll the dice and see how it goes for a year, we can't, like, just play the field. Like, you couldn't say, all right, I'm shooting for 2.1. You know, and if we hit 2.1, like, I'm looking at the AIC of refunding bonds.
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
So you're saying we're at 2.55 now.
Right.
So if we said, okay, let's just roll, you know, like, it's just like if you're trading stocks, you can set a buy or sell.
Right.
So let's say we set a buy at 2.1, and if in the ups and downs we hit a 2.1, we can't just trigger it like that.
Not as quickly. I mean, there could be upfront work to get documentation in place, get even commission approval on a delegated basis, and then watch the market. You know, I think from the point that you, given all, generally a bond issue probably takes about 2 to 3 months to do. If you did all that upfront work, you know, you could probably pull the trigger within about a month. And I guess what I'm thinking is you would still need to go to a rating agency and get the bonds rated. Mm-hmm. And that's probably about a 2-week process to get the rating back. Mm-hmm. And then you have to
give a briefing to
those. Right. And then you have to put the marketing document out for investors to look at.
So this is probably not something other commissions do, where they would set a target rate and say, we're kind of shooting for this rate. Pull the trigger at this rate.
Not generally that. I mean, generally there's what the commission would do is set a savings threshold and say, you know, go do it, but we need to achieve, you know, 5% savings, and if you don't get a 5% savings, don't do it. So I think if there were a revenue bond to happen, well, let me take a step back. If you were to only look at refinancing the 2005 revenue bond, given its size and its short term, you would likely do that with a bank. And what that saves you is the process of some of the documentation. So you don't have to do what's called an official statement, which is the marketing document. You also don't have to go to the rating agency. So there's some savings there. So again, if you were to just do those, that issue, that's probably how we would recommend going. And again, that's how you went on the 2013 bond last year, was with a bank. It just makes a lot of sense when the size of it is fairly small and the term is very short. If you were to issue either new money revenue bonds or decided to move along with this LTGO, given the size of those, we would be switching over not from a bank, but to an investment bank. So like a Morgan Stanley, or more likely, you know, in the local area, a Piper Jaffray or a D.A. Davidson or something like that. That way we'd be spreading those costs over a broader period, and they generally provide lower interest rates. So again, costs are generally higher, interest rates are generally lower, but given the size of the issue, it would probably make more sense to do that as an investment bank.
So please explain spreading the cost or a larger period.
Well, I guess meaning if my issuance cost to do an issue, if I have to pay, you know, bond counsel $30,000 and it takes, you know, $20,000 to do an official statement, and so I'm at $50,000, let's just say. If I have only $1 million issuance, then I'm putting those costs just to a million dollar issuance. For the same type of work, you could have it over a $4 million, $5 million issuance. So that's what I mean, is basically spreading those costs over a bigger issuance so that they mm-hmm. impact your issue.
It's kind of like fixed cost and doing this kind of work. You know, Cynthia Weed is our bond counsel, and she gets, you know, healthy fee for doing that work.
Would generally, her fee also is dependent on the size, but there's a point where, you know, doing a $2 million or $3 million or $4 million, you know, the cost will incrementally go up, but there's an initial fixed fee for mm-hmm. just getting bond counsel involved. You know, same thing with us, same thing with an underwriter, same thing with movies.
Yeah. You know, the system. Mm-hmm. So really, it's all, you know, what's the commission's risk factor?
There's more to go, right?
More to the
story. There is, and yeah, we can hit at the end here.
I have a tough question.
Yeah.
So, if the port were faced with this Port Hudson jetty, $1 million, needing another bond, mm-hmm. how does that play into this scenario? I mean, if port is going to be evaluated for a refinancing for this one, mm-hmm. would they be also be able to use those same fees for the financing of another bond?
So a lot of it, a lot of it would be common. I mean, again, for your advisors, that would be common. The official statement, again, the marketing document, I'd have to check to see if it would be one document or two, but again, you're doing largely there's similar information to both. So, you know, doing two at the same time would be less than doing two or one separately after another. And again, the same thing with the rating agency, you would be paying for a revenue bond rating. You'd be paying. You'd be paying for a revenue bond rating if you did a revenue bond. And if we're doing an LTGO bond, you'd have to pay for a rating for that. But again, doing two ratings at the same time would provide a discount. Did that answer your question?
I think so.
So, I mean, I guess when things are geared up, there's costs that can be, you know, allocated between two issuances as opposed to if they're done, you know, a year apart.
I think your presentation here is going to answer Bertram's question.
Okay.
Because we're asking him, if we needed X, how would we do that?
Right.
So as we go through, you might see that.
Right.
Okay. So I'm on slide six. And so as we're stepping into talking about new money issuance, what I wanted to present here was that depending on what you're financing, can have different tax consequences for bondholders, which in turn then provides different interest rates that you would see on your bonds. So at the top here are what we call governmental or tax-exempt bonds. And so those are what most municipalities issue for government-type projects. So for instance, your port building was considered a tax-exempt, I believe. Let me follow up on that. But so when you're doing governmental type purpose bonds, that would be your lowest type interest rates. And essentially that's what all the ports' outstanding bonds, except those special Build America bonds that I mentioned, they're all tax-exempt bonds.
Can you explain what that means to me? That means that the person that is buying the bond doesn't pay tax on it, or how does that work?
That's right. So there is no federal income tax to the holder of the bond. So the interest that they get paid from the port on those bonds is not subject to federal income tax.
Right.
So in turn, you get a lower interest rate than if their interest was taxable, which is the last thing on the list here. There is a subset of tax-exempt bonds for issuers who sell less than $10 million in a year. So again, it still needs to be for a governmental purpose, but if you issue less than $10 million in a year, they become actually bank qualified. And those are actually a little bit slightly better interest rates. You open up the market to some banks who would buy the bonds. The next one I won't get into too much are what are called private activity bonds. So now we're kind of stepping up the interest rate yield. These are a little more expensive than your government activity type bonds.
Excuse me, did we pass over bank-qualified bonds?
Didn't get the bank-qualified.
Sorry, so yeah, I mentioned that bank-qualified is a subset of governmental bonds. And essentially all of the port's outstanding bonds are actually bank-qualified bonds. And what
that 10 million threshold.
Oh, right. So that means is that if you issue fewer than 10 million in a year of governmental type bonds, they become bank qualified. And that opens up the number of buyers who can buy your bonds, which in turn lowers the interest rate.
Which is all good.
Right. So it's a good thing. So the next one is, again, stepping up and now going to higher interest rates, slightly higher than governmental bonds, are private activity bonds. And that's where there's some private benefit, but they're still considered a tax-exempt bond. Where we see this a lot is, for instance, we're working with a port on airport terminal. So there you have concessions in there, you have ticketing counters that are run by Alaska Airlines, but it's clearly for the public to come in and fly out. But frequently those spaces, like the construction of the ticketing counters, would fall under a private activity bond. I don't know if we see that here. I only mention it just so you've heard it. But
like, because a private concessionaire would benefit from
I get it. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
If we were to build a passenger ferry terminal or something,
right,
we might get into that sort of thing.
And the last one, again, now we're getting to the highest interest rate, would be taxable bonds. And that could occur, so those would be at the highest rates. They provide you with the most flexibility on what you could use the proceeds for. So for instance, if you were to, construct a building and then you were going to have a private tenant come in and lease it from you, those could fall into a private activity, or I'm sorry, a taxable status. Another instance would be if you were to go purchase some land somewhere, but you didn't have a specific purpose for it, you weren't sure what was going to go on that might be taxable. All this is subject to your bond council actually looking at the details of what you're financing. But once you hit the taxable, you basically have the highest interest rate. So our jobs are always to look at what you're financing and, you know, try to do as much of that at the lowest rate. And, you know, again, if some of it falls into taxable, then those are at generally the higher interest rates.
Is there a different issuance? Could you do a $2 million bond of which a million would be taxable and a million would be non-taxable?
Absolutely. Yeah, so in the same issuance, you could do that. And frequently how we would structure something like that is to try to put your taxable bonds and have them mature first so that you're actually getting, you know, again, if we're looking at a yield curve, even those would be higher than a similarly maturing tax-exempt bond. They mature first, you get them out of the way, and then followed by your tax-exempt. But yes,
so if we were, at the same time. If we were buying something, a piece of ground, that potentially could be, you know, we could put a building on it or something. How do you determine what part's taxable? Is there a ratio? There must be some sort of rules in terms of, if it's a $2 million purchase, so we need a $2 million bond.
Right.
And you say, okay, 50% of that's going to be an exempt and 50% of that's going to be taxable. How do you come up with that ratio?
In that's
simple
what,
terms.
Right. Or, so that's what your bond council will look at is what is the use?
Okay.
So if it is half and half, then they have to go in and break it down. You know, and it does get complicated because then you say, okay, so now I've created parking, and, you know, it's 50% of the parking allocated that, or, but it would be bond council to determine what that breakdown is based on information that you provide. And if you can lease out half the building to private tenant, then that'd probably be a start.
So if we were going to lease out the whole, the ground and the building, to a private operator, then the whole thing would be probably taxable.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the port, I know a number of us are going to the WPPA conference next month. The port that does a lot of this is the port of Walla Walla, where they're constantly buying buildings, you know, commercial, light industrial properties that, you know, the business has gone under. And they have a little formula. They wait a year, so the local private real estate agencies don't get in a quick, you know, that their port's buying the stuff out from under them. And, but after a year, nobody's bought the property, and it fits their profile of something that they think they can essentially flip. You know, you probably see on TV people flipping houses. They flip commercial industrial property where they buy it, you know, through these different mechanisms, and then either sell it or attract, like the last one, all the Kirkland apple juice and all the Costco's is now in a building that the port bought in downtown Walla Walla that you know, brought 80 jobs to the community, and they're making money on the whole thing. So but it might be, if you run into some of their commissioners, or their director, Jim Coombs, might want to ask about that, how to do that.
Okay. So that's the tax status. Page seven and eight, now we talk about borrowing capacity, essentially. Page seven looks at your general obligation debt capacity. And how that is factored is, take the port district's total assessed value, so I think we have that listed there at $4.4 billion.
That's all of Jefferson County, the value of all the property in Jefferson County.
Mm-hmm. So the total capacity then is this 0.25% times that assessed value, so that is the number of $11,045,000. Subtract from that number for what you have as far as remaining capacity then is how much limited tax general obligation debt you have outstanding, and that's the $10,292,000.
So that's what we have outstanding.
That's what you have outstanding for limited tax general obligation bonds.
And back to that, how did we arrive at that 0.25% of assessed valuation? Is that how much we're allowed to have general obligation up to?
Yes, it's state statute. So subtracting what your maximum capacity is from your existing amount of LTGO debt is what the this $753,000 is of remaining capacity. So what that's essentially saying is that if you wanted to go out and issue an LTGO bond today, you could not issue more than $753,000. Mm-hmm. The table below, and I don't believe we've actually seen the Port District go out for a voted bond, but you do have voted debt capacity, and that's at a 0.75% times your assessed value, gets you to $33 million. You still have to net out your existing general obligation debt, which is your LTGO debt. It brings you to 22.8, but again, that's a voted basis.
Now, is that what Bremerton did when they built their marina, or is that a different mechanism they did?
That was a different, that's the IDD.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, by yeah. statute, port districts are authorized a maximum of 45 cents per $1,000 of assessed value for property tax. And if you're at something lower than that, which we are, we're at 0.9 or something like that. And we used to be around 0.25, 25 cents, but it's gone down over the years, largely due to the Iman initiative where, you know, we're capped at 1% per year, and as long as you're in a growth county where new homes are being added every year and that sort of thing, the valuations go up, you know, our assessment keeps going down just because the pie gets bigger and we're still taking the same. But anyway, you can take the difference of 19 cents to 45 cents without a vote of the people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's good for 6 years, and that would raise multiple millions of dollars. And normally, you know, Bremerton's a good example. You know, the two of the commissioners were immediately voted out the next general election. Yeah, it was kind of, you know, you should say in the Army, it's time to bet your bars, you know, your rank, you know, you want to do it or not. But if it's a project that you really feel deeply that it's going to benefit our community and is the right thing to do, you can do it. Mm-hmm. And so it can be extended another 6 years, but the second 6 years, you have to go to the vote of the people.
Yeah. So the difference in what they're talking about here is that this is voted on by the people and where you can raise, you know, up to that. And the one that you just described, the IDD, is one that the commissioners do without a vote.
Yeah.
And at least for the first round. Okay.
So that's, again, that general obligation capacity. The page 8 then looks at, we call it revenue bond debt service coverage, and I'll explain what that is. But this is essentially your ability to issue revenue bonds is not dictated by state statute. It's dictated based on your ability to take back bondholders, which is, you know, based on the amount of revenue you have available. So typically when you issue bonds, you would covenant to a bondholder that you will maintain your revenues at a certain percent above what you have to pay debt service. So we'll take a look here at this table and hopefully it'll be clear. So what we take a look at is your 2013 financials, your operating revenues less your operating expenses provides a net operating income of about $988,000, added some non-operating revenues, and the total available that would be available to pay debt service on revenue bonds would be just a little over $1 million. Currently you have you're paying this year $480,000 on your 2005 bonds. If we take that ratio, so again, the amount of revenues I have available for debt service and the debt service that I'm paying on those bonds, that puts you at a coverage of 2.09. So I basically have double the revenues available net over my debt service. So in the bond world, the cover of 2.0 is, that's pretty good. You also have, then the $521,000 listed there is that balance available for debt service minus your 2005 bonds. Because the 2005 bonds are your senior lien bonds. They have first priority on your net revenues. Your 2013 bonds are junior lien bonds. So those have, they get what's left over. And this year, your debt service on those bonds is almost $18,000. If I sum the two debt service amounts, the $480,000 plus the $17,000, and I divide that into, again, the total amount of debt service, the balance available for debt service, that brings you to that coverage of 2.01. So that's looking at both bond issues divided into your revenues.
Which is still
net operating income. Still good. Yep.
And actually, we have a mandate to keep that above 2. Is that correct? Somewhere?
What you actually, in both cases, you covenant to keep it above a 1.25.
Oh, 1.25. So it's not, okay.
So that's the covenant. If you were to drop below that, you would be in technical default, and all these bells and whistles would go off. So you're well above that. But practically speaking, you wouldn't want to get down to 1.25, and we wouldn't want to issue bonds where we show you at a 1.25 cover, because that would probably wouldn't get past the rating agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So this concept of coverage will come in what we talk about in the next two pages. So your total outstanding debt service right now is about $500,000, what's being paid this year, based on that $1 million provides you with a 2.0 cover. Now, if I were to increase that debt service by approximately $180,000, that gets me up to, let's say, $670,000. At that debt service level and the $1 million, your coverage goes to about a 1.5. And so what I'm talking about in the next couple of pages of how much can I borrow, I'm looking at the coverage because I don't want to drop you below that 1.5. So we'll take a look at that on the next pages. But again, revenue bonds, ability to pay, and the coverage ratio becomes very important. So page 9 is a look at issuing revenue bonds. So it would provide $4 million in port projects. As I mentioned, I try to keep the coverage level above a 1.5, a 1.25 coverage on all your revenue bonds. Revenue bonds also require that there's a reserve account. And that reserve account is typically sized to the maximum annual debt service of all your senior lien revenue bonds. So you already have a reserve account outstanding on your 2005 bonds, so that would need to be supplemented a bit. In this scenario, I do assume that the 2005 bonds are refinanced for a little bit of savings, so that debt service shapes the same, but it's down a bit from your existing bonds.
You know, you're talking about reserve now, and I'm not seeing reserve anywhere on here. Have we talked about reserve back here?
It's not on here.
It's not on here? Okay, so the reserve is a new concept we just got introduced to, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, we've had the reserves for...
No, I mean, in this
presentation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And so this is assuming current tax-exempt rates. So the green bar represents a financing of $4 million, essentially 2014, 15, and 16 during your existing debt service years or high debt service years. I do interest only on those bonds, and then starting in 17, there on out, is principal and interest at a level debt service. So essentially you're paying the same amount from 17 through 34 until the bonds that are done. But again, this assumes an issuance, say, this year. If you were to delay that, then this would shift out accordingly. But really, the challenging parts are in 2015 and 16 from a coverage standpoint. But any delay in issuance, say, next year or the following year, then coverage doesn't become so much of an option or an issue, because given your existing debt, you see coverage there goes up to a 3.12.
And you're assuming flat revenue?
Correct. So this coverage assumes the 2013 net revenue that we looked at on the previous page, and that it runs out flat. That's correct.
And one would hope our revenues will grow during that same time.
Right. Any escalation in revenues, then that coverage would go up. Typically, what we like to take a look at is, you know, given what we know on 2013 revenues, what does that scenario look like?
Yeah, that's going to sound really dumb, but what this graph is all about, and I can't really see it on here yet, is that somewhere we've got $4 million. We've issued new revenue bonds to the tune of $4 million, and these things here are talking about. The blue line is what now? Revenue?
The blue bars?
Right.
Right. So that's your existing 2005 bonds that have been now refinanced. So I've actually lowered the debt service because I'm assuming those would be refinanced.
Okay. So the $4 million included refinancing the old things.
Yeah. So
okay.
Then what's in green is...
The new.
Is the new. So mm-hmm. that debt service is providing the $4 million for your projects.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, and then the red is that existing junior lien 2013 bond. So I guess the bottom line is, based on those revenues, assuming issuance this year, $4 million, coverage does exceed at 1.2 or 1.5. So we feel that that's, you know, a comfortable level that you could actually issue.
If you want. And you don't mm-hmm. have, you know,
right.
You might only want $2 million instead of $4 million.
Right.
Change the whole dynamic here.
The final page is exactly the same as the previous page, but what I do is, just because I wasn't sure what the mix of projects might be and whether, you know, half of it could be tax exempt and half could be taxable, I simply took the interest rates and I just increased them by 1%, just to see where do we end up. And you know, again, in 15-16, we dropped a little bit below the 1.5 cover, but I think, I don't know if the plan is to actually issue the, you know, new revenue bonds this year, so that I think that could be managed.
So this is still for $4 million, right?
It's still for $4 million, correct. It still provides you with $4 million, but essentially now debt service on new bonds has gone up because I assumed a 1% increase in interest rates.
So some of the bonds could be taxable, which would yield a higher rate.
Correct, because the previous page just assumed current interest rates tax exempt. So just to, you know, either put in, you know, possible market movement or, yeah, a different mix of tax exempt or taxable, I raise the interest rate.
So the previous page was assuming everything is going to remain static, and this page is assuming that things are going to be volatile, like markets really are. Or they're moving because things are improving.
Yes, yeah, again, either because the market has moved and interest rates have naturally gone up because of the market, or because we're doing 50% tax exempt and 50% you know, taxable, or you know, some mix like that in which interest rates are simply higher than tax exempt.
So what happens if things have become really volatile and it drops below the 1.25?
We wouldn't issue bonds if it dropped below 1.25.
But you still would have
went. No, my question is, what if we've already borrowed the money?
Right. So if you drop below 1.25, I mean, you still have an ability to pay because you still have money to pay. But if that were to happen, you would have to notify the bond market that you have broken your covenant of 1.25. So that would get announced.
So we're in default, and what's default mean?
Well, again, you're in technical default, so you'd have to, as a commission, you would need to cure it by raising rates as necessary. Raising rates, fees, you know, whatever you have to bring your revenues up to get above that coverage. If you're approaching 1.25, there would be things we could get to avoid
that. And it wouldn't happen, you know, we wouldn't wake up one morning and say, oh my God, over a period of time,
right?
Monitoring this.
So, just so going back, you're saying that page 9, Scott, really
yes.
corresponds to pages 4 and 5. in that if we were to pull the trigger now on the plan of 4 and 5, and I'm talking about the first column of 5, the 7114, that revenue stream that you're projecting on page 9 would be apparent.
Well, page 5 is a refinancing of LTGO bonds. Page 9 only shows your revenue bonds.
Okay.
So,
so it's only page 4, that $39,000 is incorporated in page 9.
Right.
Right, so page 4 is incorporated in this. That's right. But yeah, only depicted here are your revenue bonds.
Right, but again, okay, all right. Okay, I understand. And so going back to page 4, I mean, and how page 4 relates to 9, this is a given in terms of rates. If we were to pull the trigger on the revenue bond on page 4, we would, and say we want $4 million more dollars for projects here, we would be locking in this projection.
Right, you would be locking in the debt service. The coverage line then, I guess, would be based, you know, as we're moving out in time, what your actual coverage is, because this is, again, showing based on your 2013.
Right.
But you would be locking in debt service. Yes, that's right.
And it doesn't necessarily reflect rates. This just reflects what our net profit would be in terms of coverage. Like if our revenue started falling, then our coverage rate could lower to a point where we would get concerned.
That's correct, right.
So, but historically our revenue has been going up gradually. So the bet is that the revenue keeps going up and that keeps our coverage
right.
Substantial.
Yeah, so just
all of our leases have built-in CPI clauses for
right.
cost of living, et cetera. So as long as, you know, there's been a couple of years where the commission has voted not to do that, you know, from the recession and that sort of thing, but you know, there's built-in mechanisms that our revenue should go up continuously, you know, not very much, but at least on an uptick.
Two questions.
Yeah.
One, these gross savings, for example, on page 4, that $38,000, that would be over the 2 years to the maturity, right?
That's correct.
So that's about $15,000, $17,000.
Yeah, you get a little bit. I mean, I assume the issuance is ready. You get a little bit of savings this year, but yes, the bulk would be that over the next 2 years.
And then on page 5, the savings of, say, we have the column of $395,000. That would be distributed over that 10 years, right, from 2015 to 2025. Actually, 1 more year because we have to hold some money for a year to cover the interest on the previous.
Right, so those savings would be over that 2025. So the first column, annual savings would be about $28,000 a year.
Yeah.
The right-hand column would be about $45,000 savings.
Yeah. So we're talking about $50,000, well, in savings for the first couple of years, and then 30, that would be savings for the core, annual savings.
Right, you would start to realize those savings. Upon issuance.
Okay. And then the second question is then if your debt service on page 10, for example, looks like it's about $350,000.
Yeah, I can tell you what. So, for instance, if we look at the green bar in 2019, mm-hmm. on the current rates, that debt service is $325,000 on the current rates plus 1%, that debt service is $381,000, so a difference of $60,000. So
does that assume then, if you turn back to page 8, that if we have a surplus of $480,000 from revenue in the column there under revenue debt service, that you would subtract the $380,000 from that and the
Well, that's not a, so the 480 shown there is not a surplus, that's your debt service on existing bonds. So that's basically the debt service shown in the blue bars.
Okay, then the balance would be the 521 basically. In other words, that's the amount of money that the port has now that could be used for further debt service.
Right, so I guess what I was saying here is that you have $1 million available to pay debt service.
Yes.
You have on both the revenue bonds, you have about $500,000 you're paying right now. And what I was saying is that, and that puts you at about a 2.0 cover.
Yes.
If I were to increase that debt service by about $108,000, that brings you to a 1.5 cover.
Right.
So that's how I mapped this out, was to not exceed an additional of $180,000 in those 2 years where coverage is paying.
So that means Port would have available, I mean, they had cash available if they would do this.
Right.
About $300,000 a
year? Yeah, approximately $330,000.
That would be based still left for other capital projects.
Correct, based on 2013 revenues.
Yeah.
So how do we, all right, so Point Hudson's coming up, and this is kind of a decision that we could make now, today, but how do we know whether any of this could be potentially a taxable event, a taxable type of...
Breakwater would not be taxable.
Well, I know the breakwater wouldn't, but there are aspects of what we've talked about that could be.
Yeah.
And so how do you...
We would go with our bond counsel,
right.
Weed, and she would determine the percentage.
Okay. I mean, what are we talking about that could be taxable if we're not talking about the breakwater?
Well, just other things that we can't talk about.
Oh. Okay.
That's right. You'd want to provide basically, here's what we want to finance, here's what it's for, and provide that to your bond counsel. And
right.
That's...
Yeah, she'd come back with... Yeah, the formula.
Well, and the other question is, so the breakwater could be $1 million, it could be $3 million, it could be, you know.
We'll have that.
In the very near future.
Pretty quick, we're going to get
really?
That down, yeah.
Yeah,
we're working
through. Yeah, we'll brief you this afternoon on it. I took a step to make that happen, so.
So we could be making, we're going to have enough information to know what to do on the breakwater pretty quick and in a timely fashion for potentially that 7.1 call on revenue.
Yeah, we would have, you know, engineer estimates depending on the design, but until you actually go out to bid and actually have the contractor, that's when you get the firm number of what it's going to cost. You know, so when you have a swag.
Or it's a November call, I'm sorry.
Well, and I want to clarify that also, is that you're under no obligation to refund on or before that date or after that date. I mean, so that date, once that date passes, doesn't mean that you've given up your opportunity to call. So
yeah, that was my question.
Yeah, so you again, even on this revenue bond that's becoming currently callable in November, the commission says, you know, we want to wait till next year to do all this. That is your option. You would still have that call provision. So you could then call it next year if you wanted to. But as I mentioned earlier, just on given all things being equal, once you get past the call date, the savings just start to decrease given
right.
the same interest rate.
It's
totally your option.
As our advisor, are you bringing up particularly pages 4 and 5 to us saying, you know, not a bad idea to be looking at this and locking it in?
Well,
where the rates are at and stuff.
On 4, we would say definitely proceed.
It's kind of
from our standpoint.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, based on your, if you feel it's a good enough savings threshold, but they would be ready to go. Page 5, that does get into a bit, you know, here we're trying to say, do you think interest rates will go? At 0.53 sensitivity, you know, over a year period, you know, we've seen interest rates go up 1% in a couple months last year. You know, is that going to happen again? I don't know. We can't really call 0.53, but I guess we present to you the 0.53 as opposed to if I run this and I came back and said, you know, over this year period, the sensitivity is 2%. You know, that I think that would definitely give you pause for, like, you know, 2% a lot of change over a year period. You know, we'll just watch the market. And if we economic numbers start booming, and then, you know, you might say, okay, let's pull the trigger now. So it's more of a tough call. I think I think if we got engaged on doing the revenue bond refunding, we would continue to monitor this, provide you with updates on savings, and then, you know, I guess allow you to make a call at a go forward.
On the GO bonds, is there a period that we can kind of decide you're going for a mortgage and lock in the mortgage rates? You know, you need another month to finish the paperwork.
Right, right. So I think this, you could, again, do a lot of upfront paperwork. You know, things become stale. So if we did the official statement, had that already, you know, there's some data that's in there that we just have to be updated.
There's no way to lock in.
Not until we sell the bonds.
So, just so I'm clear, historically, as I'm looking at page one, rates tend to go down, and they trend down over that. I'm looking at the picture in the lower left column of the page.
Just look back to July of 2013, though.
So
if we probably took this chart back to, 1979 or something, I think you'd see a line that does go down, or trends downward, but,
But as the, I guess my question is, as the economy picks up,
right,
rates go up.
Do rates go up or go down?
Rates would go up. So generally, a better economy and less turmoil in the world, rates will go up. A worse economy and, more invasions of Ukraine, that's great for interest rates. They'll go down.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those perverse, we want to think bad thoughts.
Right.
Keep the interest rates down.
A terrible economy has been great for interest rates and great for borrowers.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we've seen, historically low mortgage rates over the last set number of years.
So if we think things are going to get better in a year, we should be doing something sooner.
I suppose if you're a real fiscal conservative, you pull the trigger right now and just do it. But I don't have a sense on how fiscally conservative the new commission is. The old commission probably would have said, let's do it right now.
Yeah. Well, right now doesn't mean until November, though, right? I mean, right now.
Anytime. Yeah.
No, our call isn't until November,
you
correct?
You have to wait till the call, though.
Mm. Or, right, you could.
And remember, it's going to take a couple of 2-3 months to do the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
With the old commission, this is a so-called Perner.
What I'm getting at is right now.
Word in the hand,
If we decide to do this right now, it's still not going to happen until November, because it can't, because that's when our call date is.
Well, so the bond issue that refunds your existing bonds could happen, say, 3 months from now. And then the money would be placed into escrow until the call.
But you would lock in the current rates.
And again, this rate you're showing on page 5, left-hand column, 7114, and the rate is 2.55. That's if we pulled the trigger today and said, let's do this, you would be saying that's the rate we'd end up at.
Based on my estimated rate, that's right.
Yeah. But if we waited 6 months, it could be a different number.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And again, all things being equal, if interest rates were to stay the same as you march closer to your call date from this side of it, savings will go up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. If you thought the economy would just kind of stay where interest rates stay a little bit flat, or even grow a little bit,
better off waiting 6-7 months or something.
Right. So.
I think there are two distinct issues here. One is the refinancing of current debt, and the other is perspective of additional debt.
Right.
So those are really two separate things we're talking about.
Yeah.
And they interact. It seems like we need to do one to do the other.
Do a new money with the other? I mean, I guess you certainly can.
I'm going to need to digest this for a while.
This is why you're elected to be on a commission. These are the decisions that commissioners made.
That's good. You did a good job.
You did an excellent job. Thank you. And I've heard it twice, and this was very well put.
Okay.
you decide to go through with this, then Scott will be back and Cynthia Weed will be here and.
Right, so that's.
It would be nice to see a chart of our obligations, both on the GO bonds and the revenue bonds.
Oh, on like a one graph, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, I can do that.
Like a bar chart, just to show like from now to 2025 or something.
Total debt service.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing you need to be conscious of, and due to politics, you know, election years, commissions tend not to want to raise property tax, but you know, the GO bonds are underwritten by the property tax, and even though I'm an anti-tax kind of guy, you know, in this case, personally, I feel every year we should take our 1%.
And how do we do, and where are we at historically on that, in terms of
pre-taking most years, there's been probably, since I've been here, 4 years that we didn't take it.
Yeah, we didn't take it
2 years ago.
2 years ago, or the year before that. There were 2 years in a row right after the recession hit.
Now, it's not totally lost to the ages, because
we can't.
What you have, what you, what they call bank capacity. Mm-hmm. If you didn't take it last year, then that just, you still have it. So this coming year, you could say, well, I want my new 1%, but I'm also going to take the old 1%. But what you have lost is the time value of that money over the year.
But we did take it last year, but we still have previous bank capacity.
Right, we didn't take it the year before or something.
What's it worth?
$9,000.
Per percent.
1% of $900,000.
Why don't we take it? I mean, what does that do for us?
Well, it's the time value of money. You know, it's how people get rich.
Yeah.
You put $9,000 in the bank this year, you put another $9,000 the next year, the percentage goes up, you get percent on the previous, and
so since there were two, or
it just makes our base a lot stronger,
right?
You know, when we go on the bond market.
So since there were 2 or 3 years that we did not take it, that means our bank capacity is.
We have what? 2 years of bank capacity.
We have 2 years, right. So we could choose to take the 1% that we could do, and then 2 additional percent, so we could actually make it be 3%
right.
If we chose to.
Pushing $30,000. And again, if you look at the pie chart of property tax, so all the government entities that make up that pie, you know, we're about the width of the pencil line. You know, school district and things like that are the big ones.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Okay, so. So our GO capacity is $750,000, and our taxable, what do you call that? Revenue bonds, right?
Right.
Yeah. So the revenue bond is much higher. What was that again?
Well, what I showed you is that you can borrow $4 million given.
Right. Yes. Right. And is, and then some of that can be tax exempt or taxable, right?
Yes.
Right. Of that 4 million.
Correct.
Okay. No, I don't have any questions.
I'm sure I will after I've snuggled up with this for a few nights. Right now I probably need to figure it out so I can know what questions to ask.
Yeah,
I'd
be happy to.
So this is how I ask questions, like.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
No, please, I.
And, you know, looking for any decisions, you know.
Right.
Today or next right. Meeting or something, but we should, especially on the revenue, you know, personally I'd recommend that we not wait too long on that.
Yeah, I think maybe where you're driving a little bit earlier also was that, you know, I showed you a $4 million case issuing down new money. If your need was this year $1 million or $2 million, you know, you could do that plus your income.
That's the need.
Well, now, if we were to do $2 million this year or $1 million this year and then save our capacity, which would be approximately $3 million, then we would be incurring those additional fixed costs every time we want to do this, right?
That's correct. You mm-hmm. would, yep. But I guess to another point, You could do $4 million if you issued this year. If we take a look at the graph at the end where the coverage after 2017 goes up to 3.12, you could actually issue quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's what we've kind of been saying, is once those LTGO bonds start going away,
right.
We start having a lot more.
Now, be careful if you're starting to think along the lines of, well, geez, let's just pay all these fixed costs one time. Let's borrow the entire $4 million and put it in the bank, even though we don't need all $4 million right now. We only need $2 million. The sheriff will come after you. It's illegal.
It's the arbitrage.
You can't put it in the bank and draw interest on it. That's arbitrage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is, on tax-exempt bonds, there is a spend-down period. And essentially, you should think about it as a, by, at the end
you
of the
year, you money and invest
you
it.
Have your money gone.
Yeah.
And what's that period, a year?
3 years.
Three years.
Well, that's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a percent that you would need to project that you will spend down, but essentially, at the end of 3 years, it should be all it should be all spent. So. Also, you know, if you did borrow $4 million and, you know, at 3% and yields today, you know, at your local bank were 5%, then you would be paying the federal government back the difference in interest earnings.
And the auditor checks all those things.
So there is, they will not allow you to go over your borrowing amount for what you get on your interest earnings. But right, you know, today it's,
I'm not sure.
Today's not an issue. Yeah, well, I just, you know. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next topic kind of ties into this is coming up with what our needs are from infrastructure, maintenance, capital projects, etc. We've talked about doing facility visits and kind of doing a little write-up on the physical state of each facility and what kind of projects are going to be facing us and kind of a timeline. When will they be, you know, something may need to be done, but it's got another 5 years, life expected, that sort of thing. So, you know, I guess what I'm asking is how do you want to approach this? My thought was, you know, kind of what day of the week is kind of good for most of us. Not all of us are going to be able to make every visit. I want Ozzy, and I told him to be thinking about what days of the week are good for him. So I want Ozzy on site. Eric Tate wants to go as well, and of course Jim and I. And then I think you've all expressed interest in going as many as possible. So if we could kind of say, you know, like a Tuesdays, are they good for us?
Actually, Thursdays or Fridays, or I've got a lot of junk on Tuesdays, it seems like. But Thursdays or Fridays, work, either one works pretty good. And now I do have some physical therapy things coming
up
kind of all over the place. But
it may not be every Friday for 6 weeks in a row. We might do two and then skip a week. You know, several of us have that commitment. But and we've got some conferences, like the WPPA conference coming up here in the not too distant future and stuff. But I kind of, you know, once we pick the schedule, we can just say, okay, everybody meet at Quilting at 1 p.m. You know, we spent a couple hours walking around with Ozzy primarily showing us, you know, from his through his eyes what he sees and some other things that we know are coming up. And then next week we're at Point Hudson in the airport and maybe pick up, you know, a couple of boat ramps here and there. You know, we got one right here. We already pretty much know the state of that. And but maybe on the way back from Quilting, we can swing by Matt's Mats or something.
Yeah, well, the so odd Wednesday would be kind of an interesting thing
so
because
the odd Wednesday, that might Thursdays really aren't good for me because I have a lot of, like, tomorrow I got my CEO breakfast and you know, a lot of these the boatyard committee meetings and stuff are all on Thursdays.
CJ,
if I may be so bold, if you're going to do facility inspections, you want to do them at your low tides. Low tides in the middle of the day are Thursday the 17th of April, Wednesday the 30th of April.
Great idea.
Thursday, the 1st of May. Thursday and Friday, the 15th and 16th of May. You don't want to be looking at these things at any time except outside.
Exactly.
That's where you get to see all your piling damage, stuff that's fallen in the water, and everything else that's important to these.
And we could, you know, use that as, you know, some of the facilities won't need that, but...
Yeah, the airport we wouldn't need to, but...
So you want me to just, you want to kind of key on Wednesdays and...
Well, why don't we get together with a tide book? I mean, really, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And figure some dates out and then just email it to everyone and see who can make what.
Okay.
Hey, Bertram.
Some of us would like to include it. This will be publicly noticed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear C&D doc as well.
Well, it'll be a whole boat meeting.
And wouldn't it be a value to have Tyke there as well?
Oh, yeah.
Especially for the dock things, maybe to include him.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta pay him.
He charges.
He charges.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it for free.
You have to do it twice. You might as well have it while you're all there in the year.
Well, let's Jim and I'll come up with a suggested calendar and bounce it off everybody, and then we can massage it from there.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if they get it done, you know, over the next 2 months so that we have it when we get into the real heavy part of building the budget for next year in July. Have it to get much done by then.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than that, that's all that's on the agenda for this morning.
Okay, well, if there's anything else, I guess we'll adjourn this meeting.